As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, God, Brian!
It's rough out there, Mike.
We're going to talk game three and then game four. What to come up game to game four. Game
Let's four. Get right into the show.
Game four. Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here. Say hello, Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuys, NetsDaily.com, The Athletic. Get yourself. Just get behind that paywall.
That paywall.
Just flipper yourself over that wall. TheAthletic.com.
Like the dolphin?
You know, yeah. Oh. Yeah, what were you thinking?
Died.
Thing. When I say flipper, what comes to your head?
I think of pinball, the flippers is what I, but that was, it didn't.
Oh, well,
didn't
that could
up.
Also work too. If a pinball machine also had a paywall, then you would.
They do oftentimes. 25 cents.
They do. They are the original paywall content. Arcade machines. Get yourself behind the paywall. TheAthletic.com/glueguys. A subsidiary of the New York Times.
Oh, big yawn.
Liberty, Brian.
Mike was up late watching those 76ers troll around for fouls all night and cause mayhem. It's a big 420 game, Mike. Everyone was high. I felt high during it. Everyone was just crazy. It was a crazy game.
Everyone had some CBD and THC in their smoothies, their pregame smoothies. Yeah. How do we even thrust deeply into the night, my friend? How do we go over that wall and even talk about this game? I was gut punched. I was absolutely gut punched by the end of that game. You know, we all know the stakes. You're down 2-0, your first home game. Harden is tossed for as much as I love to see it, it was completely odd that was the thing that got him tossed. Did you think he deserved to be launched out of the building the way that he was?
I mean, I disavow James Harden. I just want to make sure everyone knows that I disavow James Harden.
Everyone knows you love James
before
Harden.
Before we start, let me begin with a disavow.
I'm a Wizards fan and you love James Harden.
Yeah. This is officiating has gotten weird. It's been weird. It seems like it's getting weirder. I don't know how that could be after all this time, but that seemed to me to be like a makeup call for the Embiid not getting ejected for the game, which was a much more obviously inappropriate foul.
The only difference between that and the Draymond thing was that Draymond was on top of Sabonis.
Yeah.
So Sabonis was, I guess, viewed in that way, and he was as a defenseless humanoid, where Claxton was completely just mauled in his manhood.
Can I also say this, and this is how dumb this conversation is, but Claxton goofed up in that he immediately trollishly started clapping like a maniac. And that's, if he had writhed around on the ground like Sabonis did, who definitely wasn't as hurt as he was letting on, or maybe he was, I don't know, who knows. But that's the whole idea, right? I don't actually know. I can't say for sure. Whereas for Nick Claxton, like, he went
and then he like high-fived the bench.
Yeah.
And he waved his arms in front of the crowd. Yeah. As if he won the championship. He really needed to watch some European soccer.
Yeah.
Or football for our friends over across the pond. Because
the poker face wasn't great on that one. That was,
you have to sell that. You know, I just listened to the Rewatchables Alien episode on the Ringer Podcast Network, and you have to act like an animorph or whatever popped out of your chest. Yeah. You have to be selling that. You know, he sold it for the very beginning, right? He fell. And then he was like, what a great acting performance.
Right.
It's like a child actor who nails the one line and then completely ruins the character and just starts like talking to everyone around him. Like, no.
I want to be worried, you know, that you're
I am him.
Your nuts got kicked off into the front row. You know, I want to be concerned.
You know what? The Nets need to load themselves up with squids. Like, you know, actors do when they get shot in movies where blood gushes out of them.
Yeah.
They need, or like a, you know how wrestlers will take a little razor blade?
They call it gigging, Mike.
It's gigging. Called, yeah, they need to start gigging themselves during the game. Yeah. And just suddenly, because like, okay, this game, I mean, we're going to talk. We rarely kind of like really like dig in to the meat of a game. We rarely get out the hibachi grill, chop things up and talk about the actual meat of the game. We talk larger themes.
Yeah.
But it's also because, like, you know, I'm not that smart. But the Royce O'Neal flinging Joel Embiid to the ground.
Yeah, with his body.
How much force do you think Royce O'Neal put on Joel Embiid? Like, how little, you know, it's the amount of force that maybe I would have if some guy was like on the subway kind of like leaning against me a little too much. I would just give him a little nudge. Just be like, hey, personal space here. Mm-hmm. And Embiid flies onto the floor. Seth Partnow of The Athletic tweeted out that Royce O'Neal's the strongest man alive, because that the whole game,
it was
420
just,
game.
I mean, I forget who said this quote, but it's one of my favorites. But it's like that Joel Embiid is like Jar Jar Binks, where he just kind of falls over himself the entire game and somehow like defeats the drone army, you know, like at the end. Like, it's just, it is a embarrassing calamity the entire way through, and then it just ends in a W somehow. But also, just like to get back to the Claxton thing, like, look at the net, how that netted out. So Claxton gets fouled, right? It's not called a foul on the 3-point play that he has, so doesn't get the foul there. He steps over, gets kicked in the nuts, and then it's a flagrant one on but also a technical on, so a flagrant one on Embiid, technical on Nick Claxton for the step over, which is okay, fine, which then results in he does a mean mug. We'll call it a mean mugging, which is one of the lightest forms of taunting. Meanwhile, I mean, I hate to bring this up, but Joel Embiid has done Degeneration X suck it
yes.
taunts yes. towards the Nets over the course of this year, like with nothing, not even no delay of game warning even, and so Nick Claxton gets ejected from this game over a, do we want to have an NBA where there's no mean mugging, where you're not allowed to even mean mug the guy? I don't want to live in that world. That's not fun.
And I love Nick Claxton, and this was his game. Like, and that's what the shame of this is. You know, people be like, oh, they traded James Harden for Nick Claxton in terms of like one guy gets sent off, the other guy sent off. Of course, you would rather have, if you could say James Harden leaves the floor and Nick Claxton, if that's the trade, you would want it. But obviously, there were two separate basketball plays. Claxton has mean mugged quite a bit. I think that's been part of this. The growth in his game is all this confidence he's been building. He has obviously wasn't that good in the first two games. This was a fantastic performance by him. 8 for 9 from the field. And those 8 for 9, there were a lot of like those semi hooks, those baby hooks that, you know, if they're falling, then he's an effective player. 2 for 3 from the free throw line. He's, again, I am, you know, to go positives, he's looking better and stronger from the free throw line than, you know, if he gets to, again, 65% shooter, which is what he's been over the past 2 months, that's a great thing for his career. But again, Claxton getting out of the game. Claxton was so crucial to this team. Yeah. It put Royce O'Neal back on the floor. And I've liked Royce, but he still cannot hit anything. And he shoots 2 for 7 from the field. The team completely, without Claxton, has no presence inside the middle of the floor at all. No ability to get an easy bucket. And it that call ruined the – they destroyed the game. If I was a Sixers fan, I'd be pissed about James Harden being thrown out of the game. But if I'm going to be a Nets fan, I'm pissed about Claxton being thrown out of the game because he mean mugged, and that Embiid didn't get thrown out of the game for launching his foot into the testicles of a young Nick Claxton. Nick Claxton may not have kids.
Yeah.
He may never have. The Claxton line may be gone.
No, he's officially fine. I know that he's fine because he didn't writhe around on the ground. Had he been writhing, I would have been a little bit more worried about that. But now I know he's not, because he just clapped like a toy, like one of those clapping toys with the cymbals, you know, those things.
Oh, yeah.
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 The whole thing, the whole subject, though, or like we're getting bogged down in refereeing stuff, but it was like this whole series has been sort of just a meta conversation between the Sixers just looking right past the Nets and talking directly to the referees the entire time. It's just that's how they play. So, you know, what are we supposed to do but talk about it? But like the thing with like the mean mugging, not to get too distracted by this, but like if we're at a place now where we're making subjective analysis of nonverbal like taunting cues, and I worry about even putting this into the ether because I don't think any of this should be a technical, but like, is the Mikal Bridges gun fingers like more or less sort of like trollish and taunty?
Jesus, Brian.
No, I don't want to, like, I'm assuming the refs don't listen to this podcast and this isn't going to pick up steam, but like, like we're just, it should be all okay or none of it okay if we're doing nonverbal taunts. I mean, like I get that, like even verbal taunts. I mean, it's just like,
listen, it was a spicy mean mug, no, but I am a fan of spicy mean mugs.
As far as mean mugs go, that was not that spicy. He was not like even like up in his shirt or anything. There's a whole player.
What was it on the Kelvin scale? What kind of pepper is that? An Anaheim chili in your mind? Is that a
dude? That was like
not even a jalapeno,
like a bell pepper. I mean,
bell pepper, get out of here.
I mean, how much lighter of a mean mug can you get? It's just like, is it the duration of the mean mug that's the issue?
There was an extended climax to that mean mug. The climax of that mean mug extended past the appropriate standards. I don't think it's worthy of a tech.
It's crushed red pepper. It's a pinch of crushed red. Okay, CRP.
Hey, yeah. I'm ready for it. The problem with it overall is that there's the art of refereeing, right, is understanding the moment. It's consistency and understanding the moment. In that moment, that ref should have realized, okay, this is a playoff game. Claxton already has one technical. He is mean mugging to the guy who kicked him in the nuts. And we made this makeup call about Harden. And now they're makeup calling the Harden call against Claxton, the original victim here.
It was a house of cards of makeup calls is what this is.
They should have realized in the moment that if we give this guy another tech, he's going to be taught. Like he has to go. And that ruins the game. That ruins the game for the Nets. Again, if I'm a Sixers fan, I'd be like, this is so insane that James Harden got thrown out of the game for, again, what is with the Philadelphia 76ers for attacking the testicles of the Nets? I do not know what the Nets team deserve to have their manhood subjected to the beatings. Yeah. What do they watch? What's that Guantanamo Bay movie directed by Catherine Bigelow, Zero Dark 30. Did they watch Zero Dark 30 before that game and decide we're going to electroshock some testicles here?
Yeah.
What the hell is wrong with those guys down sick. There on the Broad Street bullies?
They're sick puppies.
But it was such a bad – listen, like the attacking referees, it's one of these things that we as laymen can do because – there's only so many things that we ultimately understand about what's happening on the floor, right? I'm not 6'11 and super athletic, though in my mind I am when I, you know, I'm at the JCC popping shots, really working on, you know, backboard, you know, like really getting the ball off the backboard. I think that's the new innovation I've been working on in my game. I want to play one-on-none the Yi Jian Lian style.
Okay.
But I really – that ruined the game for the Nets, and they still should have won – they still blew it at the end. I mean, we can go through the catalog of errors at the end. I think I need to admit to the audience that I'm a little bit beholden to the fact that Spencer Dinwiddie has been our show twice, and I like the guy, that it makes me not want to destroy. Right? Does not
destroy. Whoa.
Well, no, people on Twitter are very, very, you know, very, very upset with Spencer.
How is Spencer your, I don't totally understand that that's the point of attack here. Like, I think, I mean, I don't know what the expectation is.
Well, because he had a couple of shots at the end of the game, like those ill-advised Spencer, the one when he was trying to do the quick two, like the second to last possession for the Nets.
Where it got blocked?
Where it just gets blocked.
That's a totally reasonable, like, that's Joel Embiid blocked you, like,
by an amazing Joel Embiid play. I know, but
well, who, people you felt like see, in the moment. You want to see a Royce O'Neal three again? Is that what we wanted to see? Set up the ninth Royce O'Neal?
Let's do this quick break, come back. We'll talk more about this game three, and then, of course, how the Nets can win the series from down three games to none.
Right, let's get back.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Discover the latest collections from David Yurman, as seen recently, styled on basketball stars like Jaime Jaquez, Jalen Green, D'Angelo Russell, and others. David Yurman is a celebrated American jewelry company inspired by the beauty of art, architecture, and the natural world. The story of David Yurman begins in New York City, with David, a sculptor, and his wife Sybil, a painter and ceramicist. When the artists began collaborating, their goal was to simply make beautiful, designed objects to wear. Over 40 years later, the Yurmans and their son, Evan, continue to redefine American luxury jewelry with timeless, modern collections for women and men defined by inspiration, innovation, consummate craftsmanship, and Cable, the brand's artistic signature. David Yurman's collections are available on davidyurman.com.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back, Brian.
Good to be back.
You brought up Royce O'Neal. And the difference in this series, there's a talent gap between the top of the Sixers and the top of the Nets. Though I will say Embiid has not, like, you know, I thought it was going to be pure and utter devastation from Joel Embiid. And, I mean, he was not very good in this game, except for that block at the end of the game. The difference is Royce O'Neal shooting horrifically. Joe Harris is, you know, you had mentioned this, I think, in our playoff preview. This is a great time for Joe Harris. The pressure's off because we know that the Nets aren't going to win the championship, or we have no championship aspirations, and that he will just be able to flow and hit threes. Pressure's off.
Mm-hmm. That became pressure for him. He was like, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Even that, well, I've got a no pressure situation. My God, there's so much pressure in that no pressure situation. That's.
Do you know what my advanced analytics say about Joe Harris?
Yeah, please.
He is plus 17 in the series.
Yeah.
And he's hit one shot.
And he's really only hit one shot in three games.
I sent his game log to one of our listeners. He's only taken 3-point shots in this series. He's 1-for-8. And then the first game was when he hit the 3-pointer in the game when it was the least consequential. You know, and like, we'll obviously we'll talk about things that need to change and all that stuff. But like this, it's like Joe Harris can't be on this team next year. Mm. He can't. I don't think emotionally Nets fans can see him. Because I do think this team will be competitive next year. I think that they have a chance to be a playoff team, particularly if this team grows together, which is what I would advocate for. You got to get like Joe is. How can he not be effective at all? They need Joe Harris because he played 4 minutes and he shot three times and he missed it all three times. You know, and I'm not even blaming the game on him, but like the guy that they need on this team, like Royce is trying, but Royce is not as good of a shooter as Joe Harris. They need a guy who can actually shoot threes who has some size. They don't want to put Seth Curry out there because he's going to get abused defensively. Mm. It's shocking.
I can't believe it hasn't been Yuta time. You know, Yuta was in tears at the end of that game, and and I felt for him. It should have been Yuta time.
The difference is Dorian Finney-Smith again. You know, he had 9 rebounds, thank goodness, but he only hit one shot from the floor. Royce couldn't hit. Joe Harris couldn't hit. We did get Cam Thomas, which was what we should talk about. But inefficient shooting from Mikal Bridges because he's forced in those circumstances, and Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie had it. He was 5 for 10 for most of the game, and then he took like 2 shots at the end of the game that didn't go in. And that was ends up, of course, the difference.
So people like walk me through this. So people on Twitter are like Dinwiddie for me is sort of like it's expectation. It's results versus the expectations. Like I liked what he was doing. Did it result in like all of the points? No, not necessarily, but like he's the only person who's getting like real dribble penetration on this team. He's like super necessary. They happen to have a very good rim protector on their team, so it's a tricky spot, but like I don't totally understand the criticisms of Spencer Dinwiddie, just that he didn't
one glaring moment at the end of the game,
but that's a good decision. Like, it didn't work out, but like it's a good decision.
I think you would argue that it wasn't the best decision because He ISO'd himself. He disregarded the rest of the.
I know you're arguing against Twitter. I know you're Twitter right now. This isn't for you, but I'm saying like, how can you say that in a world in which Royce O'Neal inbounds the ball to the opposite basket with nobody around? Like the idea that we're just like, yeah, if we had just worked the ball around more and like gotten a shot for, you know, role player X, like that would have been a better look. Like It seems like we have a pretty good reason to believe that that's not always going to be the case with this team.
Yeah, I mean, there's almost like this is what's hard about the analysis of this series is that we can like go in on Jock Vaughn for some of the strategy, particularly offensively, right? But he has literally said this himself, which is why I love Jock Vaughn because he at least is being honest. You know, he's just not just like outwardly lying and being obstinate, is that this team only has one guy on the floor who can penetrate, which is Spencer. And so, you know, Spencer has never been an efficient shooter ever. You know, he's just he is an efficient, for the most part, ball handler. He usually is not giving up the ball a ton in turnovers, and he is able to distribute and get he is the assistant turnover god. But he has not really been an efficient shooter. He's the only guy on this team that can really get around the basket. Bridges is expanding his game in that way, but he's also in his career has never been that. Cam Johnson, who I've been very impressed with and is very much in my idea of like he needs to stay almost no matter what, obviously besides like a max contract, he is still – you know, a wing shooter. That's who he is. So, like, this team is hamstrung. The weakness of the 76ers is they have a bad defensive backcourt. And, it should be the Spencer Dinwiddie series. And Spencer's playing fairly well. But the Nets don't have anything else. They had Cam Thomas. And maybe this is the time to talk about Cam. Cam was in there for 11 minutes, 3 for 6. One of those shots, to be fair to Cam, was the shot clock was ticking down. And he had to take a fadeaway corner three over Embiid's outstretched arms. And my God, if he had hit that, I'd been like, okay, well maybe he should play more. But he was somewhat effective. Is there anything there for you? I think we're both just sort of biased against him. But
we're incredibly biased. But I was also thinking like, yeah, they have a bad defensive backcourt, but they've got a really good defensive front court, the 76ers. And and also they have impunity. They're you know, Joe Embiid's a made man for some reason. He doesn't get any fouls or not enough to get him out of the game. So he's a made man. And that makes it really hard to attack the rim to diversify that. But we've been talking about this. Like, we just don't have diverse offense. We have role players shooting threes in huge volumes at a very low percentage, and that's without Spencer's driving. That's this. I mean, and to your point from previous episodes, like there is no vertical game. We don't have verticality to our offense, as they say in the business. And you know, having a more deft lob assist kind of guy would be beneficial, but we don't. You know, we just don't have the personnel right now. Would we benefit enormously from a starting point guard and having Spencer play big minutes coming off the bench in a microwave combo guard position? Yeah, that would be super good. We'd be a good team in that world if we had Luka Doncic, you know, starting and Spencer.
It'd be a little bit better. It'd be a little different.
It'd be different. But that's not the case. So we have to make two. And you know, it's, yeah, I don't know. I didn't answer your question at all. What was your question?
I don't even know what my question was. I mean, I guess it's like, there's part of what is, again, keeping me sort of sane in this moment is that there's such a talent gap. There's such like a cohesion gap between the two teams that, you know, I don't think we give this team enough it's not credit's the right word, but like clearance or acceptance. The fact that all these guys were relatively thrown together, right? This is not a constructed team. This is a team put together from various different parts. It's like when you have, my nephew's a big Lego guy, you know, you have the Lego parts, the Pirates to the Star Wars Legos, and then Avengers Legos, and then you make one big ship, right? That doesn't really, there's no cohesion to it.
That's obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like a perfect Pinterest, you know, lake cabin.
Right.
You know, great cedar wood. You know exactly what I'm saying? Exactly. That I'm envisioning. Have I been on Pinterest lake cabins? Sure. Maybe a little bit lately.
Like Lego cabins or just regular cabins?
Just like regular cabins. Oh, okay. Just like I've been looking at a lot of like German cabins lately. Oh. Online
German cabins, like country houses in Germany.
Yeah.
How about you ever go to the fjords? Check those out.
No,
those are nice cabins. Those are awesome cabins.
Oh yeah,
yeah. The fjords.
Is that Sweden?
Yeah, Scandinavia somewhere. Yeah, I think Sweden.
Yeah, so one of those people.
Yeah,
you know, one of those white people. Yeah. Anyways, it's like, how angry can we be? I guess, you know, with the anger I want to exhibit is towards the refs, which is boring. The anger I have is like, the Nets did have an opportunity in game two to win, in game three to win. This game is so crucial. The reason why game three is so crucial is that there is a chance Joel does get suspended for game four because of what he did. I don't think it's a big one. The, you know, Brian Lewis, the Post, had put out that the NBA is reviewing the incident with Joel, but that is a standard procedure, that if for every flagrant one, the NBA reviews the video and decides maybe if it needs to be upgraded like they did. I mean, like Draymond was a flagrant two and he was thrown out of that game, but you know, there's so much more different from what happened with Draymond to Joel. But obviously if the Nets had won last night and then the 4% chance that Joel is going to get suspended for game four to give the Nets even more of an opportunity to capitalize, you know, that changes the series completely. The reasons why it didn't happen was because Claxton got thrown in the game for a Mexican hot chocolate level of spice mean mug. Is that fair enough?
I don't think I've ever had a Mexican hot chocolate. What goes in there?
Oh, the distinction is that it has spice.
What kind of spice? How spicy is it?
The amount of spice is the amount of mean mugging that Nick, that exact.
It. Yeah.
It's a perfect comparison. Trust me. When you have one, you're going to be like, "This is a Nick Claxton mean mug."
Okay,
oh, we should new business idea: mean mugs.
Ooh.
Spicy hot chocolate with faces of NBA players mean mugging.
How do we have to set up like little pop up stands or something, or how do we keep it hot? That's the
How do we keep it hot? There's various ways to
put chemicals on the bottom, and you like crack it, and like one of those heating pad things.
Jesus,
yeah, you know,
yeah, that's healthy. Anyway, so I don't like what you know. What do you want to see different, Brian?
There's nothing to do, Mike. It's impotent rage. There's nothing we can do. the odds are stacked. Deck is stacked. Everything's stacked against us. We knew this going into this would be. We just wanted the one win. Just the one pity win for the storyline so that we could just say, like, suck on that.
That we didn't get swept.
And this is the problem. Our desire for one win is born out of pettiness. It's not born out of love for the team. And maybe the love energy is what we got to fix, Mike. It comes back to that. This is, the karmic universe is not going to provide for one win that's born out of that kind of pettiness. We got to change our outlook, okay?
We have so much more, like, I'm afraid to begin this conversation because we have a whole offseason staring us in the face after potentially Saturday because the Nets don't play until tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pretty short turnaround for as spaced out as the play. Yeah. I think it's 1 on Saturday is when it is. 4:22, yeah. But, you know, this series is making me feel both that the Nets need to get Trae Young – but also that I want to...
That's what it's making you feel? That's crazy. It's a crazy
but
feeling.
Also, but more, that I just want to keep the group together. I just want to keep this, like, fun, young, unencumbered group together one more year.
Those two ideas seem like they might be in conflict with each other.
They are very much in conflict with each other. Okay. You've got a lot of complex feelings. I don't know what to do with those feelings.
My God. Yell them into your pillow is what I do.
There's a lot of things that I need, Brian, psychologically. I'm a twisted web of wants and needs, and they intersect and also conflict.
I'm less conflicted about that because here's what I think. Here's my silver lining. I think, you know, Lord willing, heaven and God willing, that we have some kind of output from Ben Simmons next year, plus McHale growing, plus Nick Claxton growing, makes a very cushy landing spot for a preeminent star player, as long as everything's trending upwards, we're playing around 500 basketball, you know, it's culture vibes are there. We can pitch those to star player X who will not be named, who cares. I think that's the shortest path to getting back into the spotlight where we belong, Mike. Can I say that? You know?
Yeah. I think the best thing for this organization, like, you know, me saying I want Trae Young is like from what I see visually on the team, right? Like, they need a creator, but I actually don't want Trae Young as a fan because they need to stop the chaos cycle on this team. It seems like the team is filled with good dudes, a team of bros who just want to try hard and, you know, be just like great humans. And then there's the Ben Simmons thing. And we didn't even talk about this, Bri, but Brian Lewis, New York Post again, mentioning his name, says he had like a story about Ben Simmons, and a source familiar with the situation says, there will be an assessment around the start of May, and if he feels exponentially worse or no improvement, sure, he could have surgery, essentially. That's what they said. But every sign indicates that won't be the case. So probably no surgery for Ben Simmons. And he's made really good improvement, says that source. And he was there on the bench, bent over, like those chair, you know, they need to get him a lazy boy if his back is really hurting so poor, like so badly, but you know, he's there, he's around the team. He's engaged. Like, he's such a confusing guy to body language because he's engaged. He's talking to teammates. He seems into it, but yet he doesn't play basketball. And so I go back to what you just said. It's like, the thing I'm holding on to for next year is that this season was a season from hell for him, trying to come back to play basketball, come back from injury, had back surgery, knee issues. All the things were like compounding on top of him. Mm-hmm. And that next year, without the KD Kyrie spotlight, things will feel like God, if there's an article mid-December from Dan Devine or Michael Pena at The Ringer, and it says something like, is Ben Simmons having a comeback? If that happens, then the world is our oyster as Nets fans.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's my dream. Dream. I just want to keep the team together. That's what. But,
also want to trade everyone for Trae Young. So, all right, we'll come back to that.
Game four, do you think they should start Cam Thomas? just for fun? Like,
Thomas minutes were – they weren't – there was a moment there where it was like, okay, could be one of those special games. And JV really threw Nets Twitter a bone by putting Cam in early as he did. That was a direct like call out for Nets Twitter. Yep. No, I don't think. I mean, I think we'll see a similar amount of Cam Thomas, but I thought we'd see no Cam Thomas in game three, and there he was. So who knows? Who really knows anymore? I mean, this is, I mean, let's call it what it is. This is going to be, we're going to get swept out of the playoffs here, Mike. This is what's going to happen. I know nobody wants to hear that, but it's time to face facts here.
The glimmer of hope is that maybe they'll just suspend Joel Embiid for one game because he really should have been thrown out of the game.
I don't even want to win like that. Like, I'd prefer to get the win over. We're going to get the one win, get it while he's on the court, you know? It's not going to feel real otherwise. It's just going to prolong the inevitable.
Do you think that Harden, how much of an impact was it that Harden wasn't on the floor?
Zero. Because it's Maxey who's really the...
Yeah, Maxey. Yeah. Now, Maxey's part of what helps Maxey to operate is the fact that Harden's out there, but Maxey, I'm just so goddamn impressed by. Like, he plays with such like energy and confidence, and it just seems like if it's open shot for him, he's just gonna nail it.
Told me that, like, hey, here's your options. You can have both Claxton and Harden come out of the game, keep Embiid. Like, would you do that? I was like, I'd be just say no on its face. Like, Claxton is more important. Like, it's crazy to say Claxton is more important to our team than Harden is to their team at this point.
Yeah, Claxton is really, and that was his game. That was his really good. There would have been possessions with him at the end of the game where, you know, he could have gotten the ball and done something with it. Or also, Embiid had 5 fouls with like 8 minutes left or something.
Yeah,
whatever it was, and. Now, not that Claxton's going to, like, you know, force Embiid to foul him, but it would have made it harder for Embiid.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the other factor, was that that Embiid had there was an opportunity for Embiid to get knocked out of the game, and it didn't happen. Yeah. So,
I can think of, like, 3 non-calls on Embiid that were obvious non-calls throughout the game. Like, just the Claxton foul that didn't happen that led to the nut kick, like Royce O'Neal getting chucked into the first row, like chasing a loose ball.
Oh my god, that's so insane. Yeah. He just got completely washed out by Embiid, and it's like there's times when that happens in basketball games when they call the tickiest tack things, but then like a guy just gets bulldozed and they're like, well,
yeah,
you know, what are you gonna do?
Loose ball, man. It's crazy out there.
Yeah,
basketball's crazy.
And also, I mean, honestly, Embiid should have gotten a foul called against him for flopping when he got pushed over by Royce O'Neal.
Yeah.
When Royce...
By Royce's tummy. His static tummy.
The Teletubby of basketball, yeah. Royce O'Neal. So your prediction is the Nets are going to win the next 4 games. Is
huge
that right?
Comeback. Lightning in a bottle, baby. Been saying it all along. Nets in 7.
Can I tell you one thing that's giving me a glimmer of sort of like self-pride? About the series.
Pride in yourself?
Yeah, in myself. Is that I was about as hot as anyone on Paul Reed coming out of the draft.
Mm.
And the Nets could use if the Nets had a Paul Reed on the roster, they'd win a championship.
I don't remember. I think this is the first time I've ever heard you say the word Paul Reed. The words.
Oh, my God.
I don't think I've ever heard you talk about him. So that's news to me.
Do you want to know the only reason why I mean, I know that I was on Paul Reed. And the reason why was because... You know, I scout. There's a couple of ways I scout. You have your methods. I have my methods. Your methods are
YouTube.
Hips.
It's YouTube. Yeah.
Oh, and YouTube. But yeah. more really hips. Yeah. Like, right? Thick hips, big thighs. That's kind of like...
It's just a body thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, but I got to see the body. Yeah.
What are the most important parts of the body for a basketball player?
So, I mean, there's a whole... I like body language, fluidity of movement, things like that. Yep. I pay close attention to.
And how big their butt is also
huge.
Like
that's, I mean, it's, I like it. You know, I need a 90-degree like angle. Armbrust. That's really, I'm looking for a shelf is what I'm looking for. If I could do the bar.
Morris, that was something to see. Yeah. Mine is, there's 2 things. One, I obviously have the theory that bald basketball players are better. Think of Jordan. Think of LeBron should be bald. Kareem ended up bald. Kobe, bald. Just it's
Von Carter, bald.
Von Carter, Shaquille O'Neal, Alex Caruso.
Yeah.
So that's one theory. The other one is I just look at blocks and steals, and Paul Reed coming out of DePaul had like 6 combined blocks and steals a game, and that's all. I'd never watched him play basketball, but for my analytic model, that's all I need to see. And look at him now, Bri. God, if the Nets had him.
Sir, who are you talking about?
Paul Reed.
Paul Reed, right. Yeah, he's good. Right. He is good. He's winning. He's doing winning things. Yeah, I think we're a little deflated. That's okay. It's one of those types of episodes.
I'm deflated like a Chinese spy balloon flying over the America, baby.
Nice.
Do people still care about that? We're like
yeah, freaking out.
Okay. Check us out on Twitter at bkgoogleguysnestla.com. Are you gonna do the dirty stream for game four?
Yeah, of course.
Everyone should get in there. You had a lot of people in last night.
Yeah. It's a party in there.
Check us out on Twitter.
You got to go to Discord, discord.gg/goodguys to understand any of what we just said. And if you don't, you're missing out.
Yeah. I mean, the way we like to operate with our fans, it's a game of Zelda. Yeah. You know, there's multiple levels to really accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Right. What you're seeing with the podcast here is you're in the Deku tree. Okay. You're not even, you're early. This is just the tip of the iceberg. It goes deep.
Thanks for having me on your show today, Brian.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.